Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Los Mineros and USW book launch. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session. Instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then zero. As a reminder, this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, Mr. Ben Davis, International Affairs Director, United Steelworkers. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm going to hand it over to Ken Newman, the Canadian National Director of the United Steelworkers, who will be chairing this press conference.
Thank you and good afternoon. My name is Ken Newman, the National Director for the Steelworkers. Let me first of all thank the press for coming to this press conference. I can tell you that Napoleon is a hero to the steelworkers. He's had a seven-year fight against corruption and injustice, and the steelworkers in Canada are in total solidarity with him. He has now written a book to expose the many lies, and it's for that reason is that we have the conference today. And I'm going to now turn it over to Napoleon Gomez first to speak, then followed by International President Leo Girard. Napoleon?
Thank you. On behalf of Los Mineros and the United Steelworkers, I want to welcome you, fellow labor activists and progressivists, journalists, and those joining us by phone today for our press conference. For those of you who do not know me, my name is Napoleon Gomez Urrutia. I'm an Oxford-trained economist and a human rights activist. Since 2002, I have proudly served as the president of the National Union of Mine, Metal, Steel, and Allied Workers of Mexico, better known as Los Mineros. Today, we come together in solidarity for protecting our collective dignity and taking action, because these are the core of who we are, what we care deeply about, and what we stand for. Whether we are combating income inequality for workers through collective bargaining, negotiating for better safety and working conditions, or fighting to ensure that working people receive the fairness and respect they deserve, we hold all of these principles close to our hearts. Today, I'm here to share with you a journey of dignity. It is my journey, it is Los Mineros' journey, it is the United Steelworkers and the working people everywhere. I wrote this book to share this journey, to challenge those who oppress us and give us a voice to the victims of this needless tragedy that continues in Mexico and in many parts of the world today. I wrote this book because of a crime not just in the coal mine of Pasta de Concho, where 60 miners died, but also because in Mexico, when we try to expose this crime that it was committed, we uncover a vast web of corruption. I would really like to read only a small passages of this book, just to give you an idea of what happened when we arrived to Pasta de Concho. We accuse the company of industrial homicide or corporate murder after they decided on the fifth day of trying to rescue our colleagues and brothers to let them abandon at the bottom of the mine. At the end of the corridor was a set of closed doors that led to the company's main office. After spending some time with the families, I entered the office and found an assembly of directors, managers, and technicians from Grupo Mexico and General de Ulla, the outsourcing company, who ran the mine. When I appeared in the doorway, a man named Rivera, an engineer brought in from the steel company Altos Hornos de Mexico, was speaking loudly and jovially, as if a tragedy hadn't occurred from just outside the office. He cut off his sentence as the second he saw me, and he smiled quickly, falling from, and the smile quickly falling from his face. Labor Secretary Salazar, flanked by his personal secretary and other assistants, was also in the room along with Javier García de Quevedo, president of Industrial Minera and longtime member of Grupo Mexico Board of Directors. Spread on the table before all was a map of the mine. It showed the depth and of the different tunnels and described their interior. Except for the relaxed engineers from Altos Hornos de Mexico, who didn't seem to understand the magnitude of what had happened, they all looked absolutely terrified, and they had reason to be. None of them would look to me in my eye. I demanded an explanation from Salazar and García Quevedo. I told them that we would settle for nothing less than a detailed and truthful description of the possibility of rescuing our brothers, Los Mineros. Many looks were traded before anyone spoke. No one wanted to speak a wrong word. They knew that outside the office, pressure from the families, the union, and the media was mounting. At last, Group of Mexico's engineers spoke, explaining that they had a huge explosion that caused several rocks, slides, or falls, as they are known to Los Mineros, showers of coal and rocks that block and close off access to the inside of the mine at certain points. They said that the blast generated temperatures exceeding 600 degrees centigrade. A body would incinerate at 400 degrees. And according to the technicians and experts, it generated an immediate reduction of oxygen to levels of 3% and a correspondingly high concentration of methane and carbon monoxide, which in some parts of the mine would amount to greater than 100%. They said they weren't sure whether anyone in the mine was alive. Just judging from this report and the apparent lack of air below ground, it appeared that it would be difficult for our colleagues to survive under those conditions. This is just a passage of the book. It was a terrible tragedy, an explosion that we had. It was a catastrophe. And when I was there with my colleagues, putting all the pressure on the company, we felt that the company and the government of Vicente Fox at that time, they were just trying to cover up the damages. They were more concerned about damaging control than rescue our colleagues, our brothers. And this is why on the fifth day of trying to rescue them, they decided to shut down the mine, leave the army and the federal police forces to guard the mine against the anger, the concerns, and of course the cries of the families and we, the members of our union. And this is why I accuse the company of this crime, this criminal negligence, this corporate murder that they committed, or as we call, and I call, for the first time in Mexico, industrial homicide. So this is trouble, which we are at the end, is in my story. This is a story which is going to help also the victims to have a word and a say, and the families, of a tragedy that should never happen again, not only in Mexico, but anywhere else. This is a struggle which is also in this story, in this book, in which it brought together a stronger loyalty and unity for the members of Los Mineros, our Democratic and Independent Union of Mexico, and brought together a stronger international solidarity and alliances that are the one we have not only with the United Steelworkers, which is a very strong ties, but also with many other unions all over the world. This is a denounce and expose of outrage, but also of hope and a vision for the future generations, for the future of trade unionism. And I hope that I want to share this with all the readers, that they want to share this story and learn from this experience so that we can be in a better world in the future in which no oppression, no abuses of power, no political persecutions are allowed, coming from wherever they come. The power of the enemies shouldn't be more important than the dignity of the working class and the middle class. Thank you.
Uh,
I see this in many different lights. I see it in the light that Napoleon just expressed of a opportunity to lay out in very factual and direct terms what really is the collapse of dignity. I come from a mining family, hard rock miners. My father, my uncle, my brothers. I grew up in a hard rock mining town. And if you look at what happened in places like in Canada, Westray, or you look at what happened to Chilean miners, or you look at what happened to miners in the coal mine at the Upper Big Branch mine in the United States, all of those are tragedies. But every one of them, the government and the corporation, were forced to keep digging and keep searching and keep looking for survivors, and then if there were none, to bring the bodies home. When the mine owners and the government colluded to close the mine after 5 days and not attempt to continue any rescue or to recover the bodies, I think Napoleon and his union did the right and honorable thing of calling it for what it was, only then to see an unleashing of persecution like we've never seen anywhere in modern times. So I view it as Napoleon's right to expose the facts of what happened in that tragedy and the struggles that have gone on for he and his union since then. And it's a book that has to be read by everybody, every trade unionist, every young person, every person who ever thinks they're going to have to go work for a living with their hands or go down in a mine or in a smelter or in places that are dirty and dangerous. But I also view it as a love story. And I thought about this for a long time and went back to my room before here and started to think of what I've been through with Napoleon, what Kenny and Steve Hunt and Danielle, our union, has been through in Canada and in the United States with the support of the AFL-CIO, with the support of the international labor movement through the now industrial. And I could think of nothing more than this is a love story. This is a story of a man who went to Oxford and got an economics degree and was the director of the Mexican Mint for 12 years. But his roots were with the miners and his father's history with the miners. And he left that to go to be the leader of the miners' union. And you see in those pictures up there, a man that loved his members, who was willing to stand and fight for them, stand and defend them, stand and support them, stand and demand that they be treated with dignity. So the book, Collapse of Dignity, is a good and proper title. But it's also a book about the members who love their leader and have stood behind him for all these years, where he's had to be elected in exile. He's had to represent them from thousands of miles away and still stand strong with his back straight and look you right in the eye and demand that his members be treated well. The story of love exchanged by a leader to his members and his members back to him. And there could be nothing greater in the labor movement than that unity. But it's also a love of family, his wife and his children who have stood by him, who have been separated, who have been torn apart, who have been mistreated and maligned. But their family stood together and stood strong and supported each other. A man who loved his wife and a wife who loved her husband, who stood by him as he was being persecuted. And a global labor movement that has come to love and admire him. In my lifetime, I've said many times, I had three heroes. My father, David Lewis, a founder of the New Democratic Party, and Lynn Williams, one of our predecessor presidents who I admired. I now have a fourth hero. And if I expand that, that fourth here is Napoleon Gomez, but if I expand it, it's Napoleon Gomez and his members and his family, who have stood up to more than anyone could be imagined to stand up and resist in the name of dignity. So for me, it's an honor, a privilege. I think I can say on behalf of our leadership and our membership who have grown to love Napoleon and his family, that this book needs to be read, it needs to be circulated, it needs to be studied, and the corruption that is in it needs to be confronted. So I'm proud to be with Napoleon today and proud to call him my friend. Thank you.
Or we could take in the room. We could take a question online, Aretha, if you're ready.
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone phone. Again, to ask a question, please press star then one. Mark Roenberg, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. Senor Gomez, we've heard a lot about what the Mexican, what the owners of the mine did to you and your union. Could you go a little bit more, since we don't have the book in front of us here in Washington, D.C., so could you go a little bit more into the complicity of the Mexican government, particularly the Office of the Presidency, the Minister of the Interior, and the Ministry of Police, in colluding with the mine owners to basically cover up everything?
I can answer your question saying that, in fact, during the government of Vicente Fox and Felipe Calderon, the right-wing parties, there were a lot of corruption, and the government colluded with the big mining companies of Mexico, Grupo Mexico and some other of the bigger companies, mining companies. At the time when the mine exploded, the Secretary of Labor at that time, Francisco Javier Salazar, was a chemical engineer, owner of, in his private business, two companies, which was a supplier of chemical products for Grupo Mexico, the owner of the mine. His son-in-law was the delegate in the state of Coahuila where the mine was located. The inspections were never done. His son was in charge of the National Commission of Energy and Natural Resources, which gave the concessions to Grupo Mexico. The whole system of corruption that we unveiled, and it has unfortunately has still prevailed, and prevailed after the government of Fox under the Calderon government, and still the influence of this group is terrible and is something that we have to fight for. This is a struggle for, and our resistance is for dignity. Dignity is about not only defending economic rights, workers' rights, human rights, is much above that. When you lose dignity, you lose respect. You can be humiliated. You can lose. You lose self-confidence. You become an object to be exploited, as they did in Pasta de Conchos and in many other mines. Grupo Mexico is considered one of the 10 most non-ethical companies in the whole world by international organizations, and they still have the support of the government. This is a shame. Everybody remembers in Chile, the miners, the 33 miners who were trapped in 2010, they were found alive 17 days later after the tragedy and the explosion in the mine, 17 days later. In Mexico, they shut the mine 5 days after the tragedy. They never recovered the bodies. We still have 63 bodies abandoned at the bottom of the mine today. After 7 years, 63 bodies. At 120 meters depth, while in Chile, 750 meters depth in a hard terrain in the rock mountain. This is a real shame. In Chile, it was a moral victory. they were rescued in Mexico, they were abandoned. And nobody has been punished, or there is another proper investigation about this, because the government has been colluded with this company, Grupo Mexico, which owned, by the way, Asarco in the United States, the American Smelting and Refining Company, and in Peru, Southern Peru Copper Corporation. And their interests, their business interests, are in railroads, in movie theaters, in trains, in many other activities. So this is something that it should have never happened again, not only in Mexico, not against working people in Mexico, or against the democratic and independent unions like the one I'm very honored to preside. So this is a story that we have to denounce. We are demanding the rescue of our colleagues today, of the 63 bodies of our colleagues, the families to be compensated with dignity and justice, and to do a proper investigation to make accountable for those who were responsible of this situation. And I just like to add and announce that we, because of this situation, we have filed today a claim for defamatory reasons against Grupo Mexico, Germán Feliciano Larrea Mota Velasco, and six other members of his team who were colluded in trying to break our union, to break myself and my family, to break my colleagues, Los Mineros. So we are taking this legal action to vindicate our name now that we have been clear in all different tribunals of all these false accusations that the Mexican government colluded with Grupo Mexico, create and invented against us. So this is one of the steps forward we are taking.
Leo Gerard, Napoleon did a very articulate job of talking about dignity and those 63 miners that are still abandoned at the bottom of the mine. And when your question was about the collusion with the government and the mining companies, it's been well past 6 years that the government has used every form of fabrication to attempt to get Napoleon in some kind of tribunal, like court, convicted of something. And every one of those cases that the government itself brought to court has been dismissed, or Napoleon was found to have not been guilty of any wrongdoing. In fact, we hired an outside auditing firm because of some of the allegations that were being made in the early days to do an audit of the Mineros income and expenditures. And the government had accused them of hiding money in Switzerland. What that was, the per capita that they were paying to the International Metalworkers Federation in Switzerland. That was the stupidity and the length that they were going to try and fabricate something to embarrass both Napoleon as a person and as the president of his union, as well as his members. And as a result of those fabrications, the Mineros and Napoleon have been in court almost on a continuous basis for the last 7 years, and every single allegation that was made against him was dismissed, including trying to put a red flag against him to limit his international travel, which just in the last few weeks we succeeded on as well. And Napoleon's lawyer from Vancouver that has worked on that is here, and he might want to say a word about that. David? You need a microphone.
Here.
Like a summation, not a speech.
Very concisely. Napoleon instructed us to communicate with Interpol, and we began that communication in May of 2012. And on March 29th, 2013, just 2 weeks ago, Interpol itself, which is an international police agency, determined that the red notice that Mexico had asked them to post, which is an international arrest warrant, would be deleted and set aside. So Mr. Gerard has indicated that the Mexican courts have dismissed all of the charges against Napoleon, but an international police agency, Interpol itself, has now agreed that the arrest warrant requested by Interpol is invalid and should not be honored and has been deleted from Interpol's records.
Anyone else?
Is he planning to go back?
Any other questions on the line?
Senior government planning to go back.
Yes. I keep telling my colleagues that I have my plane ticket in my pocket. I just need a boarding pass.
Okay.
And I hope that I can have that boarding pass very soon.
Okay.
And of course I want to go back and lead and preside the union, not at 5,000 kilometers as I have been doing for the last 7 years, but together with my colleagues and my brothers. But once the conditions are set safe and there is respect for my integrity and the dignity of the union that I preside, and when those terms are satisfied by the Mexican government and guaranteed, then I will go back. Whatever it takes, we have gone so far in these 7 years that we are not going to go. Give up or surrender or just maintain our efforts, our struggle, our dignity just for the sake of going back. We will do it very reasonable with the advice of our legal team led by Mr. David Martin in Canada and Marco del Toro in Mexico, and as soon as they feel that it is safe for me to go back, I will go back.
Thank you.
Anyone in the room?
Any other callers on the line?
Yes, yes sir. We have Gary Hubbard. Please go ahead.
Well, Napoleon, you answered the question on the red tag. That was, you provided the answer that I was also interested in. Will you be applying for a visa to the U.S.?
Well, as soon as my legal team advised me to do it. We have been close contact. We have our strong solidarity from our brothers, the International United Steelworkers, presided by my colleague and friend, my brother Leo Girard, and also the American Federation of Labor, presided by Richard Tronca, our brother. And I hope that I will be able to apply again for my visa to go to the United States and be able to travel and exert my responsibilities as an international union leader, as a member of the Executive Committee of Industry All Global Union, the biggest global union in the whole world, and with more than 50 million members, and many other conventions and meetings that I will have to bring the world of the Los Mineros, of the mine workers of Mexico, the experiences and the knowledge that we have acquired along these 7 years in order to continue on the struggle for justice, respect, and dignity.
Well, if I could just make one observation, congratulations on your book. I hope everybody on this call will likewise advocate your story, and we welcome your voice for workers' rights everywhere. Thank you, sir.
Is anyone else on the line?
We have a question from Jose Lopez. Please go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Gomez Urrutia, Jose Lopez from the Mexican News Agency. If you could answer in Spanish, please. Has yourself or anybody from your legal team had any contact with the new Mexican government? And secondly, what went through your mind when you saw what happened to Alvester Gordillo a few weeks ago?
Second question. Can you repeat the second question, please?
What was your take? What went on your mind when you saw what happened to Alvester Gordillo a few weeks ago?
Yes.
I will, yeah, with pleasure, I will reply in Spanish.
Thank you.
No solo algunos miembros del equipo legal de defensa del Sindicato Nacional de Mineros y mío en lo personal y de mis compañeros, miembros del Comité Ejecutivo Nacional, han tenido contacto con el gobierno, sino también abogados y miembros del Comité Ejecutivo Nacional. Al menos se ha vuelto a establecer bases de diálogo, de negociación con el gobierno a través de la Secretaría del Trabajo y Previsión Social, de la Secretaría de Gobernación y del propio Partido Revolucionario Institucional del PRI. Hay un nuevo ambiente que seguramente permitirá a través de este diálogo y conciliación llegar a un resultado en el que se respete la autonomía y la libertad de asociación completamente. Yo, respecto a lo del caso de Esther Gordillo, es una situación completamente diferente a la historia, a la experiencia, al caso de los mineros y de nuestra organización sindical. Yo creo que esa es una decisión que el gobierno tomó en base a las razones políticas o jurídicas que haya considerado. Pero nuestro caso es un caso de injusticia, de persecución política, de abuso del poder, de corrupción, que tiene que detenerse ya en México. Eso es algo que no puede continuar. El futuro de la clase trabajadora del país debe responder y descansar más en el bienestar de la clase trabajadora y de la población en su conjunto. Yo creo que este es un objetivo que se ha trazado el nuevo gobierno y esperamos y confiamos que vayan a estar de acuerdo a este objetivo y correspondan en la resolución de este conflicto que no tiene ninguna razón de ser, que nunca debió de haber existido y que a los verdaderos culpables y criminales ahora sí les hagan justicia y les apliquen todo el peso de la ley como corresponde.
Finalmente, ¿qué condiciones cree que deben existir en México para que usted regrese?
Follow-up on that? Was there a follow-up on that?
Yeah, a follow-up. What conditions do you think should exist in Mexico for you to go back?
What conditions? Well, right now, this is what we are estimating, en español, ¿verdad?
Sí, sí, por favor.
Esto es una de las cuestiones que estamos evaluando correctamente con el equipo legal de defensa, con mis compañeros, miembros del Sindicato Nacional de Mineros, con las demás organizaciones nacionales y, sobre todo, con las grandes organizaciones y federaciones sindicales internacionales. Esta lucha ha sido una lucha que ha despertado y ha unificado y fortalecido a los trabajadores de México y del mundo, porque esta es una lucha por la justicia, por el respeto y por la dignidad. Y eso es lo que en su momento tomaremos la decisión para crear estas condiciones y desde luego las garantías de parte del gobierno y de las autoridades en controlar estas agresiones y esta corrupción proveniente de las grandes empresas mineras y siderúrgicas de México, y por el otro lado que permita que la libertad, la autonomía sindical y el derecho a la libre asociación se respeten. Este es el camino para seguir adelante y eso es lo que esperamos de este nuevo gobierno, que esas condiciones existan para que podamos garantizar y asegurar un regreso a la normalidad de nuestras actividades de nuestro sindicato y un pleno respeto a nuestra integridad y seguridad personal.
Do we have any other callers?
No, sir. No further questions. Thank you. We do have Mark Gruenberg. Please go ahead.
That was very interesting, the conditions that Senor Gomez set for going back to Mexico. Unfortunately, I don't know Spanish. Would he mind repeating those in English?
Story in helping with all the materials and documents that I want to thank. Generally, I wouldn't like to express any or mention any particular name because probably it would take such a long time. But all of you who have really participated in this, my deep appreciation and my gratitude for your support. But above that, I would say that this example of struggle, this resistance, had brought closer together the trade union labor movement of the whole world. And this is something that we will bring together for the future generations. We have learned a lot. We feel now stronger and more committed to continue in protecting and defending workers' rights and human rights. Thank you very much.
And again, let me just make one comment that people should know, that the paper which was the book is made up was produced by Steelworker Local 455 and Flambeau River Papers, which is in Wisconsin. So if there's no further questions, I think this brings the conference to a close. Is there, there's a question in the room.
I have a couple of questions for you. So first,
who are you?
My name is Jonah Kopper. I've been following the story of the book for some time now.
Okay.
I'm curious to get some insight on that.
I'm curious to get some insight on the suit and the objectives that you hope to achieve with the action in court filed today. So maybe we can start there.
Yes. I think we want to take, we have decided to take all the legal and political actions to vindicate our name and our reputation. So we decided to file under the advisor and the team led, as I said, by our legal counselors in Vancouver, to file this claim for defamatory reasons and moral damage against the union, against myself, against my family. And we want to bring accountable all of the people who were involved in this attack, in this needless attack, in this covering up of the facts, and all this abandonment of our victims, who suffered not only in pastor conscious, but also have suffered along these 7 years, because more than 200 people have been killed or assassinated in different mines belonging to Grupo Mexico along these 7 years. So we want justice, we want respect, we want to vindicate our name, and this is the main purpose of this claim that we have filed today in the Supreme Court of Justice of British Columbia.
And in your opinion, is Mr. Larea representative of typical mining company ownership, or is he a madman?
I think he's a madman. I think he's an insane person that has wasted hundreds, sure, thousands of millions of dollars in this conflict against the miners' union. And this is a man who has to be brought to justice because of all these criminal acts that he has committed against the workers, the miners, the families, and against the whole of the working class in Mexico. So I think he should be investigated deeply, and I hope that this claim will bring justice to the union, to our members, to our brothers, to our families. We cannot allow this to happen again. This act of corruption and abuses of power and political persecution should never happen again, not only in Mexico, but in any other parts of the world. So we will follow up this claim, and we will go and as far as it takes in order to make justice and have the respect for our dignity.
And will you be sending copies of the book to Larea and to the President of Mexico as well?
I will. I would like to send a copy to the President of Mexico and to Larea himself. He will read what I think about him in this book, but he knows exactly that the facts are proven, all of them. We don't have any defamatory, we don't have to use defamatory terms. His real actions have led to this. So I will be able to, everybody to read it, even our own enemies of the union, of the working class. Why not?
In fact, we have a lot of our members that travel to various events in Mexico, and not only should they get a copy from Napoleon, but some of us might ask them to deliver one personally to his office.
And then, final question, would you be willing to sit down at the table with Larea and have a conversation
absolutely
with him?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. But okay, I think he's not willing to do it, but I will. I'm open for that. I'm always open to negotiate with whoever is from the mining companies, from the steel companies, from steel industries, or from the government itself. We have even demanded several times about having this table of negotiations, And they haven't accepted because, of course, they feel protected by the government. I think it is time that things change, because they have a legal responsibility against the workers, against the union, for collective bargaining agreement purposes, for violations of labor rights and human rights. And I hope that this government can sit this company and his main shareholder, Germán Larrea, to sit and negotiate with us, Los Mineros, and in front of me, as we did it in the past. But yes, I'm willing to do that whenever it's necessary.
Let me put in perspective that over 7 years, and we're now on the third government, third president, in the first 2 years, two presidents for sure, they tried every legal impediment that they could to damage the reputation of Napoleon, his family, and of the union and its members. With what we accomplished just in the last few weeks with Interpol, they've run out of options. They can continue to file the same case in different courts, but they shouldn't expect a different decision. So at some point they run out of options, and the logical option for Larrea as a businessman and as a human being and the government is to bring the parties together and talk about, first, what do we need to do to get the bodies out of the mine? Even if they're skeletons, you bring the bodies home. Secondly, what can we do to make sure that the workers in the mining sector and in those mines go to work with dignity? That's why the book's title is so profoundly important. It's the collapse of dignity. The dignity of work, the dignity of the miners, the dignity of the families. That collapse of dignity has led to this. And they've made a laughingstock of the Mexican legal system by court shopping. And while they court shopped, they got thrown out of every court. There's even one court that said it's clear that the government's documents were fraudulent. So I think that it's so important that this story gets told all around the world.
Thank you.
Okay, do any more questions?
No questions on the phone, sir.
Okay, well, we'd like to thank all the press for their presence and everybody here, and that'll bring an end to the conference.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T Executive Teleconference. You may now disconnect your line.